Hi, my name is Irina Kremень, and I want to welcome you to another episode of the Blue Beauty series, hosted by Jeannie Jarnot, the founder and CEO of Beauty Heroes. In this podcast series, we interview a beauty and wellness brand's founders, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders to talk about the future of beauty and how to build businesses that leave our planet better and bluer. From zero waste packaging to regenerative practices, you will discover why materials matter, how to make philanthropy the foundation of a profitable business model, and which innovative brands are leading the blue beauty revolution.
Thank you so much, Irina. It's a mouthful. Dr. Sarah Villafranco, founder of Osnia. I'm so happy to talk to you today, and I feel like you are going to give us the state of the state in this space. And you've been around for, I think, you know, quite a long time. I think you've got a really good objective bird's eye view of the space, really bridging beauty, wellness, lifestyle. You are a social media, you know, maven and, you know, I think educator and really a trusted voice. And so I'm excited to talk to you today. And if you don't follow Osnia Organics on Instagram, I highly recommend it. Most of the people who are tuning into this are from, you know, there are other brand founders or companies who are interested in talking, you know, hearing about Blue Beauty. And I feel like you're OG, you're original, and we've been working together for a long time. So excited to hear from you.
Yeah, great. I'm happy to be here. And also, I really miss you. So it's great to see your face.
Yes. Yes. Great to see your face. And one day we will see each other in person again. Because when we opened the Beauty Heroes store, you were supposed to come out and do something with us. And then COVID hit and then we had to cancel. But that's not all. Hopefully in the next year, we'll have you back. But you're joining us from Colorado, from the beautiful mountains of Colorado, where Osnia has an incredible lab and production facility and a team that makes these beautiful artisan products. And you started with soap. So let's go back to the beginning. You were, I think, the, you know, very unique. I talk to founders and no founders from all walks of life. I don't have any founders who come from your walk of life. So why don't you tell us where it all started?
Well, we could go back to 1973. That's when I was born in Washington, D.C. And I grew up there and ended up going to college at Georgetown. My dad actually this spring retired after 50 years teaching at Georgetown Law School, which is so amazing. So as part of his benefits package, I got a free education at Georgetown. And so that's what I did. And then from there, I kind of like sort of stumbled into medical school. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I was from a very academic household. And so graduate school, I think, was, well, I thought it was expected of me. And so it was like law school or med school, you know? Yeah. And my mom was a lawyer and my dad was a lawyer. So I was like, no, I don't want to do that. So exactly. And at the time I was working in a laboratory at Georgetown University studying cognition and aging. And it was really interesting to me. And I sort of found that it was the days when the elderly subjects would come in for testing sessions that I looked forward to those days more than anything. I just couldn't wait to talk to them and hear about their lives and watch how their brains were working. And then I kind of knew like that I would be interested in medicine. So I thought, well, let's try it. So I did that and I went to Georgetown Medical School. And when I was in med school, I couldn't quite pick what direction I wanted to go. I was like, I like everything a lot, but I don't want to do just any one thing. So I ended up in the ER, where I got to do a little of everything, but ultimately, you know, passed most problems to someone else to sort of tie up. So, and it was a great job. It's great for my personality. I'm a super calm operator under pressure. And so I always thought it was such a privilege to be able to be there for people during a really stressful time and provide clear, calm communication to them and reassurance that we were going to help them and that things were going to, you know, work out, which mostly they did. So that's how I ended up in the ER. And it was, like I said, a very cool job. And I worked with some really wonderful, wonderful people. I miss that camaraderie of the ER still. But yeah. It was a really exhausting job. And the reason it was exhausting was not so much because of the stress, because any, you know, business owners who are listening right now know that the stress of owning a business is right up there with the stress of the ER. Sure. The stress came from the system to me. So I'm not in any way trying to bash Western medicine, but there are a lot of things about the system that are suboptimal, is a word I'll use today. Where, you know, we're just putting band-aids on really big problems and we're not giving people the tools they need for daily health. And some of those tools are so simple. I'm talking about like a hammer and like a screwdriver. It's like, it's, you need to eat well and you need to get outside and you need to have some fitness in your life and you need to meditate and you need to sleep. That's your health right there. And we focus on that so little in medicine that, it's all considered like alternative medicine, which really it should be considered foundational medicine.
Yeah.
So I ended up feeling kind of just frustrated and powerless. You know, I'd see these people go home and I'd be wrapping up their ankle and putting a cast on and talking to them about smoking. Like, guys, you gotta stop that. And, you know, it just wasn't quite the right spot for me to speak the language I speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah. So osmia, so 10 years in the ER as an ER doctor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is incredible. So you started osmia. Well, I know the story, but why don't you share, you know, I mean, I think it is definitely a leap to becoming a founder of a brand like osmia, which is grown to be something so, so special.
Well, you've always been such a wonderful supporter and it's truly like, it's so heartwarming to have you be such a fan of the brand and be so, so kind to us as we've grown. The leap was a weird one. It was not one I was expecting to take. I've always loved lotions and potions. And I remember, you know, watching my mom, who was a partner in a law firm in Washington, D.C. and lived a very, very busy, high pressure life. I remember watching her put her Clarins face oils on. And at the time, those were like really pretty natural, right? For, you know, and the smells that came from them were really different. They were plant smells. And I'm sure they have some isolates and all kinds of stuff in there. But you could tell it was like a botanical scent and it would slow her down. And that was, I remember that from my childhood, that she would go from high speed into like, while she put these oils on her face. And so I think that kind of stuck with me. And then when I was living out in Colorado and I had just had my second daughter and my mom got sick with pancreatic cancer. And so she died when my second daughter was 5 months old. And I went back actually to be with her at the end. And so we were, my daughter who was three months old when she died. My daughter was staying with me in the house with my mom who was in hospice. And, you know, when she died, like the moment she died, my daughter was in the other room and she hadn't made a peep all week and she woke up and squawked right when my mom died. And it was really kind of cool. And I don't really know what I believe about those types of transferences or energetic things, but I know something happened in that moment. And what it gave me is this sense of like how quickly all of this is going to go for all of us. And it was this collapsing and expanding of time. So I think that was the moment where I had like some sort of internal shift. And I thought, God, it's good. She was 64. And I thought, this, even if I live to be that old, you know, I hope I live way beyond that, but it's just going to go so quickly. And so I think that gave me that sense of like, I want to make sure I'm doing the thing that I'm meant to do while I'm here and not like slogging through an existence that I sort of accidentally created for myself.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So then I'm grieving my mom. So I have grief swirling around and I'm nursing a baby. So I have hormones swirling around. And those are the kinds of things that allow you to completely upset your life and do something crazy. So I took a class making soap because I just was like, I haven't done anything creative in so long. Mm-hmm. And I want to just see what, if that part of my brain still works. And that was like a total light switch moment for me, the soap making class. I went with my friend who was a veterinarian and the two of us had like a major leg up in the soap making like class because we understood the chemistry really quickly. And like a lot of the other people who didn't have any scientific background were really struggling with some of the concepts and like weighing and measuring stuff was really slow. And my friend Judy and I were like, let's go. This is so cool. And exactly. And we just wanted more. And so that's sort of when I really like my brain took off in the direction of making soap. And then it kind of all followed from there. Like soap was the first. And once I got that to a place where I thought it was a good blend of science and art, then I thought, oh, I want to do skincare too. And I have a host of skincare problems, skin problems myself. So I was able to develop products that kind of supported some of those issues.
Yeah, I think, you know, just hearing this back, this story, I know it and I've made soap with you, which was like one of the highlights of my time as a beauty hero. So fun. And now you have a huge soap production. I wouldn't say huge in the sense that it's like, you know, it's so artisan. So it's big, it's huge to me, but it's, and I think, to know you, I'm so not surprised that, you know, you took soap and elevated it to this like art form. And it is really like the best soap in the world. If you've never tried a bar of Osmia soap, that like opening it, you know, everybody in my house uses Osmia bar soap and it's like, you know, we pull it from our inventory, like every couple months. And they say, can I have one? And I say, yeah, of course, you know, and which one do you want? And we open it and it's like the fresh bar and it's just it lasts such a long time. And it's such, you know, I think we all feel, you know, it's amazing what like a beautiful bar of soap can be. And I think it's because I know all that you put into it, but it's, you know, Osmia is so much more than soap, but it started with soap and it turned out to be, like I said, you know, knowing you and your personality really, it turned out to be like the best soap, which I'm not like I said, I'm not surprised at all. So you decided to run with that, with soap and turn it, and it evolved into something bigger, which Osmia makes products for all over the body and face and wellness. And I want to hear like when you thought like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to start a company with this. How did you sort of think about starting something that was like good for the planet, good for our bodies, good for, you know, a good business idea? Like, how did you put it all together? How did your brain, you know, what was your thought process?
You know, it's funny because so much of it was intuitive, almost more than I thought any of it out. You know, like I did an enormous amount of homework on ingredients because, you know, when I jumped from medicine, I kind of had to justify it to myself because, you know, becoming a board certified emergency physician is like, it's not like an easy, it's like a 10-year process. And so I needed to like make it okay within me that I was switching. Like, and I knew from the beginning, I wasn't going to just kind of like make soap in my kitchen and sell it at farmers markets. Cause I felt like my desire to help people live the healthiest life they can was still like really central to my purpose. And so if I was going to start this company, I really wanted to know how that was helping people live a healthier life. Mm-hmm. So I began this process of researching ingredients, and I tried to kind of look at, okay, like what evidence is there that X, Y, and Z ingredients really are bad for you or bad for the planet? And the fact is, there's not a ton of like hard evidence in any direction for, you know, parabens or phthalates. There's like a couple studies out there, but I picked the ingredients that had enough question marks around them that I was like, I'd feel better if we just didn't use those things, because either there are some questions about the effect it's having on human health, and I think human evolution, or planetary health. And if they have question marks, let's just skip it. Let's use the other stuff. There's good stuff. It's not, we're not talking patchouli and burlap anymore. Like, we have great options. And this was in probably 2010, when I was like really starting to amp up product development and research and all that stuff. So, you know, I knew that I wasn't going to include certain categories of ingredients, which is sort of what's listed in our, what we call our tox screen, which is on our packaging and lists the categories that we don't use. There's a blog post on our website that explains why we don't use each one of those. So it was important to me never to just say like, oh, parabens, yeah, those are bad for you because someone told me that, so we're not going to use them. That's not my nature anyway. I'm kind of like a poker. Like, I want to, oh yeah, why? Tell me why. And so I did that with a whole slew of ingredients. And so we picked these ingredients we weren't going to use. And then packaging wise, you know, I've always been, I know you've heard this phrase from me a million times, but I mean, I wish the term environmentally friendly packaging didn't exist, because it doesn't exist. Only the words exist, but there is no real environmentally friendly packaging. Yeah, there's only environmentally considerate packaging. And so it's all on the spectrum, and no answer is perfect. And so for me, since we launched, I've just like obsessed and will always continue to obsess about what we can do better. And there's sometimes the answer for a long time, like our Purely Simple face cream was in, it still is. It's in this squatty plastic airless pump, because most pumps have a metal spring, and that metal spring makes it so that they don't get recycled. And so from the beginning, I chose the plastic, silly looking fat little pump because it didn't have a metal spring in it. And I knew that it would be able to go through the recycling streams. Now, it turns out that ultimately there are a lot of places that won't recycle mixed plastic. And so we are putting that into glass this year. But even our glass pump, like our mud cleanser that we have, isn't perfect because it's glass on the outside, but the inside part gets thrown away. And so it's this constant evolution. I never see any choice that we make as a final choice. I always see it as like, I think this is the best option for us right now. We'll come back to it.
Yeah. So when you're talking about being environmentally considerate with packaging, there's a lot of other ways that Osmia, like what are some of the other ways that you thought about starting a company that was environmentally considerate?
Well, I mean, the ingredients are probably the first thing, because they're all going down your drain at some point, whether they're getting washed in your washing machine or literally rinsing down your drain from using them. So the ingredients are sort of like the start of it. Like, what is happening? I live on, you know, 30 acres in Colorado, and I live on a septic field. So anything that goes down our drains goes right into our trees. And anything that's going down city water drains is going into city water systems. So that's why, you know, we like ethoxylated ingredients is like a massive category that we don't use. And it's for that reason. And that's a category that a lot of brands don't choose to exclude. But we do. And so there's the ingredient piece, then there's the packaging piece, but then it's not everything else. Like, our facilities were all, you know, built with like low VOC OC stuff and recycled beetle kill pine. And, you know, we really, you know, picked our materials well. And then, you know, all the silly stuff, like all of our printer paper at the office is recycled and we compost everything. And we, you know, all of our shipping boxes are 100% post-consumer recycled. And we use, you know, anytime we get a shipment from anyone, both at my house and at Osmia, that has any kind of plastic in it, I take it into Osmia and we use it for our wholesale shipment. So any plastic you see from us is recycled plastic that we're trying not to throw away. So it's like those micro decisions in everything we do that those really permeate the whole, depth of the company.
Yeah. Because I've had the benefit of being able to visit Osmia on site mm-hmm. and see Osmia wholesale orders here, I feel like I've got this special visibility, and I feel like Osmia doesn't even like get as much credit for all of the considerations you do make for the environment. Mm-hmm. They're many. And I feel like that's kind of what I wanted to talk a little, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about today, because they are, like you said, intuitive for you. Mm-hmm. And I think for, there's a lot of companies entering the space. And talking about things like, talking about ingredients and packaging and all of those things that are important, and using them, I think it's a positive thing, right? Like all of the, making products in a more environmentally considerate way is definitely the thing to do. You know, when you know better, you do better. But Osmia, like, I feel like it's so deep into the company. Every package, like if you order from Osmia online, which I've never done as like a customer, I don't think. But you can feel the intention all the way through your company. And mm-hmm. I think, there's a lot that you don't necessarily even think you should get credit for, but I think it's setting a positive example. So that's kind of why I wanted to talk to you, because there's a lot of mechanics that go into sourcing ingredients and packaging and boxes and all of that. And there's so many micro decisions that are made every day and how you build that.
It's like a web, it's like a scatter chart. And there are some days where you have to make a decision where you're like, I don't love this. This is not as good as I want it to be, but it's what's available to me now. And then other days, where you get to make a better decision, and that feels really good. And I think it's when you stop looking for those better decisions that you get in trouble. I remember going to a packaging conference like early days, and this guy was like, wearing a kind of a bad suit. And, he had his little corner and he had his line of stuff. And he said, what's your story? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, we're a natural skincare brand out of Colorado and always looking for packaging innovations and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, I got something for you. And he takes me over and he says, blathers on about some piece of packaging and says, this really lets you tell the green story. And I'm like, but does it let me do the green thing? Because I don't care about telling a story mm-hmm. if like I'm not doing the green thing, right? We had a conversation with one of our printers the other day, and we use all FSC certified paperboard for our boxes. And they are wanting to use another program that essentially their printers calculate how much paper they've used. And then they plant trees to offset that, right? But we were like, but are you still using the FSC certified paper? And they're like, well, if we did this program, we probably wouldn't. And we're like, well, if you're not caring where the trees come from in the first place, I don't really care what you do afterwards. Like, you don't get to put a Band-Aid on it after you do something irresponsible. So that's like another example of like people wanting to tell a green story, but not doing a green thing. And so really, I think that's that's one place where we differ, is like we will question people and ask the hard questions of ourselves. And it's like, it's a constant rolling process for us.
Yeah. Since you brought up trees, I think you were the first brand that I saw that started planting a tree with one tree planted with every order. Now it's Beauty Heroes does it. And many companies are doing it, which is amazing. But I think you were the first, you inspired that. And I guess I didn't say this in the beginning, but when I started Project Blue Beauty and when I wanted to help highlight brands that were doing, that I felt like were genuinely, you know, working within their companies to make a positive impact on the environment, you were one of a handful of founders that I thought about that I knew really, you know, were working on this already, you know, and that was where, you know, I was thinking, okay, well, green beauty really is blue beauty. Like right. These green beauty founders that really care about the environment, they've already gone blue. They're already going down this road. Let's just help them. Help amplify this and have conversation. So being, you know, I have no idea if you were the first brand to do that, but you were the first brand that I saw doing that. So where did that come from?
That actually came from the Green Spa Network. They had a conference that I attended with my COO, Mary. And we heard this lecture by a guy whose name I'm going to forget right now. There's actually a blog post about it on our website because he was really inspiring to me, but it was a while ago and my memory is short. So he explained climate change in a way that I thought was really interesting. And he likened it to essentially like a bathtub that is already overflowing. And he said, we can't just turn the flow of water down and call it good. Someone needs to be bailing. Mm-hmm. Or the ceiling is going to collapse and the tub's going to go through the ceiling. So, yeah. And I just thought, oh, that's like, how can we bail? And it's a temporary tree planting is in no way a perfect solution, because when it comes to climate, we've put ourselves in a position where the only choices are suboptimal choices. But there are still things to do. And sequestering carbon in the form of tree planting is a way to kind of like to get like somebody bailing for a little while we figure out how to decrease the flow. And so while eventually those trees will release carbon again, hopefully we are working on technology to help us know what to do with carbon going forward. And so I think we started in 2018 with one tree planted, and I think we're over 50,000 trees now. So, you know, when you start it, you're like, okay, I planted 1,000 trees. Like, but it does add up. And I know where you are and where we are, the wildfire effect is really quite real. It's too real and it's terrifying and it's upsetting. And so we've planted all of those trees in Colorado, which is really feels good to be doing something locally for land that's really been ravaged by fire.
Yeah. We've planted all our trees in Northern California because feels so close to home. I mean, we have employees who, you know, every year we have employees who've gotten evacuated. I haven't, but you know, we have major blackouts and the whole thing, and it's just been really terrifying. But yeah, there's no bad option when you go onto one tree planted where to plant them, but it does feel sort of good to be doing something in your own backyard, hopefully, you know. So I want to talk to you a little bit about something you and I've talked about in the past, which is the beauty industry sort of obsession and fascination with always putting out something new. And I think that it's just gotten set to be such a, it's such a quick pace, you know, that things are coming out in the world. And it's, you know, I mean, we're, you know, as beauty heroes and we represent over 100 brands now, I definitely sometimes feel like, how do we slow down, you know? And, you know, there's a tension there. But this is something that I think you've got a really good, sort of approach to it, or at least have figured out how to manage it within your own company. So you haven't put out a new product since last year. I would say before that, I can't remember when you put out a new product. It's pretty slow at Osmia. And we know that when something comes out, by the way, like purely simple mud cleanser is purely simple mud cleanser, right? I got that right.
Gentle. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
I knew I had one word wrong. Yeah. Purely Gentle Mud Cleanser is such, like, I love it. It's in, love it. Love, love, love so much.
I do think it's my fave.
So you worked, I know how hard you worked on that one product and getting it perfect. And I know, that, you know, I know that we waited for like, I don't know, 2.5 years or something for it.
Yeah, I know.
So it's a lot slower at Osmia, and I, you know, definitely is a walking your talk kind of thing. And the pressure that you feel seeing brands launch for, you know, existing kind of brands, even in your community and space, launching 3, 4, 5 new SKUs every year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a bit of a conscious decision. I mean, so part of it wasn't when we launched in 2012, I think we had 25 SKUs. I mean, that's crazy. That is just absolutely insane. I would never recommend that somebody do that. For so many reasons. One, it's so hard to make enough product to keep 25 things in stock all the time. And two, you know, editors can't cover all of that. Like, so if you want to get coverage, you know, you have to dole it out to the editors, and they only care about what's new. So it was a bit of a, you know, an innocent mistake by me, like not being at all in the beauty industry and not having any business experience. Like I just launched it because I was like, okay, now I have everything from head to toe. Let's go.
Done. Yeah.
Done. We're good. So, but I wouldn't do it that way again. But the fact is, we did have everything from head to toe, and it all worked really well. And I got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm not going to play the game then. I'm just not. Now, we do have products coming out this year, but it's, you know, it's sort of, we have gotten to a point now where we will, you know, we're starting to partner with some people on a couple. We've made everything in-house except for Purely Gentle Mud Cleanser. For all 9 years we've been in business, we've made every single product. That's a lot of product. And so as we grow, we just can't like make it all ourselves anymore. And so eventually we'll be, you know, partnering with people on a few things, but which allows us to kind of expand our offering a little bit. But I just sort of decided I wasn't going to do it their way. And I think it's probably meant a slower, more organic growth pattern for our company. You know, I look at some of these other companies that have come on the scene in the last 2 or 3 years, and they're great, great packaging, great messaging. Their ingredients are great. They're not greater than Osmia's ingredients, but they're great. And so they get a lot of press because they're new and shiny, and they deserve a lot of press because they've worked really hard on their lines, but it's just a different game. And we're sort of like, I think of us as like the blue jeans and white t-shirt of the green beauty industry. Like I don't think we're ever going to go out of style. You can always like dress it up or wear it, you know, on your day off. Or, I mean, I just feel like we are solid and steady, and there's no gimmicky talk in anything we do. And we're not going to cater to people's insecurities for marketing purposes. And we're not putting snail slime in our products. You know, like whatever we're using is chosen with common sense and a whole lot of research. So I think I may have shot us in the foot in a way, you know, but we're growing, and we've never not grown. Every year, year over year, we're growing. And not like a little bit. I mean, 20 or 30% every year. And so it's what we're doing is working. It's just not the like explosive model. And it's not the flashiest. And it's not like the most attention grabbing way to go about things. But I have like really rock solid relationships with editors who know me, and they know me as a voice of reason and science. And like I said, common sense in the industry. So I think it's just a different approach, but it does take a bit of courage. I had to work through a lot of insecurity about, gosh, we're not launching anything new. And, you know, I felt this pressure to do it for a while. And then I worked through that. And now I'm like, hey, when we launch something new, we'll let you know.
Yeah, I hope other founders out there who resonate with your approach gets, you know, this conversation gives them some courage.
You look at May's line and like, she's exactly the same, right? She has way fewer products than we do. And she's like, yeah, I'll launch something new when I'm ready and when it's perfect. And yeah. I get that. And I think that's another piece in our product development. When you talk about how long it took us developing the mud cleanser, wait until our revised Purely Simple face cream comes out, because that's been over 3 years in the making. And I think I'm probably the biggest like pain in the ass person to work with for a lab partner, because I made it all myself for a while. And so they'll come and they'll say, hey, it's too expensive to put this in at this percentage. Let's put it in at this percentage. And I'm like, well, is it effective at that percentage? And they're like, well, it's better if it's at this one. I'm like, then let's do it at that one. And we'll adjust the price on our end if we need to. But like, I'm not going to throw something in there just to put it on the panel. Like, that's ridiculous and not fair to the consumer. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm part of the rate limiting step, because I the scent. I mean, I'm literally calling them and like, hey, can you put it from 0.17 to 0.16? Because it's a little, the sandalwood's a little strong, you know? And they're like, seriously with this woman? So, I mean, I think I'm part of the problem too, but that's okay with me, because I think that's why Osmia products like smell the way they smell and do feel the way they feel, is because I'm obsessive about that stuff.
Yeah. It's definitely the right place to be obsessive and meticulous. So speaking about ingredients, over the last 9 years as sort of green beauty and definitely a trend towards more plant-based ingredients. I don't really love the word natural, but you know, plant-based botanicals, there's just a lot of focus on that. And I'd love to hear from you, like, what have you seen change in terms of the availability, pricing, sustainability, all of it?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the last year is like a little bit of a different story, because it's just been weird in terms of availability and supply chain and all that stuff. And I think we haven't seen the end of that yet. And I understand why that's happening. I mean, just at Osmia, in order to provide, you know, 10 feet of space between people who are packing orders, you know, when we have sales, it's taken us 2 and 3 weeks to get through orders, just because we only have so much space to put so many people in. So I get it. I mean, it really, that makes sense, but it's sort of a separate issue. I think I think the thing that I've seen that was super frustrating to me early in my Osmia career, but is now becoming a little bit hopeful, is that people who, and I mean, this probably goes back to, you know, Aveda, which isn't the cleanest brand now, but like they paved the way for a lot of what has come since. Same with Tata Harper, who is still a pretty green brand and has paved the way for the super green, the greenest green of us. You know, it's really, well, I lost my light. It's really kind of interesting, because when we started out, you know, and when I was, so 2012 we launched, I felt like a squeaky wheel. I was like, guys, you can't tell me more about this, the sourcing on this, or you can't tell me where this is coming from or whether you're going to be able to get it again. Like, there was just so much vagary in all of it. And you'd get these really like cryptic emails back from suppliers. And I just was like, I'm sorry, like, that's not a good enough answer for me. I'm going to need to know more. So get back to me when you can. And I'm not ordering until you do. Right. And so I think I felt like this squeaky wheel. And sometimes, and I know you know this too, and so do so many of my fellow brand founders, but sometimes it's really disheartening. You know, it's like you can't believe people don't care as much as you do. And it can get to be a downer, like really. And so early days, I definitely had to like push through to stay positive. But I think enough of us have squeaked for long enough that now people are, they have answers to these questions, or they're like, I realize we need to work on this and I will get back to you. And a lot of them do now. There are still some suppliers I would never buy from, but the options are better now. I mean, people can tell me, hey, this Palo Santo comes from this one ethnobotanist down in Ecuador who has a license from the government. He has this plot of land. All of his Palo Santo comes, you know, from this plot after it's fallen to the ground. He has a license to harvest the fallen wood. And if he doesn't get to keep his farm, it's going to cattle grazing. So then I'm like, I feel pretty good about using that Palo Santo, you know? So, it's, you know, not, I mean, I wouldn't say every single ingredient we use has that level of a story behind it. Some of it doesn't. But I think that, you know, I mean, certainly we use an enormous amount of certified organic ingredients. And we have since the beginning. I've always said if it's available as certified organic, that's how we'll use it. And if that makes the price go up for our customer, then it does. And that's sort of like I'm trying to stick to my guns and say, like, I care about organic farming. I care about supporting it. And because the other stuff is cheaper is not a good enough reason for me to give up on that. And I really care about the consumers who care about that too. You know, I think it's important to be able to provide that.
As the demand has grown for organics, has the price, just price and availability, has that changed?
It's both. I mean, one up, one down. So the price is huge and the availability is a little scattered. One thing I would say is that we feel lucky about is that we have pretty established relationships with a lot of our people. So we'll get a phone call from our, you know, essential oil person who's like, hey, we have a kilo left of rose essential oil. I don't think the next harvest is coming until blah, blah, blah. Do you want it? And we're like, yes, please. Thank you. You know, and so yeah. I think having been in it for a little while, we have some good relationships with our people. And that is probably helpful. On the other hand, you know, some of these explosive growth brands with massive funding behind them can probably buy much bigger quantities than we can. And they could squash a company like ours really out of existence if they wanted to, you know. So that's
right, by all of the supply.
Yeah. Like that happened. What did that happen? I guess it wasn't so much that it did actually. So vanilla was in trouble for a while because of a horrible monsoon season in Madagascar. And for a while it was just out of stock. And so we just pulled our vanilla products out of production for a while. But we found out later that a really big company had purchased like an incredible amount of the available vanilla because they had gotten the heads up that it was, you know, and so it's all a matter of scale, right? And it is, you know, it's not, the green beauty community is pretty wonderful and loving, but everybody is still trying to do the best they can for their business. So I get it. But
yeah, so I would say, you know, I think it's interesting, like Osmia is not just a brand. I feel like you're running a blue beauty, consumer, you know, product company, but also like this blue beauty lab, like you're a lab, mm-hmm. you know, your own lab, and you are creating products where, you know, that's different than a lot of the brands we work with who work with mm-hmm. a manufacturer and, yeah. you know, they obviously have really incredible formulas and ideas, but you are kind of bringing it to life from the ground up. So anybody who's really interested in that, I think, you know, Osmia is a really great brand to look up to. I just want to end with what really is your vision for the future of Osmia and, you know, furthering and pushing your company to be good for the environment and for people?
I think we just need a bigger platform. You know, I think we've been for a long time now, just kind of like growing at this pace we can barely keep up with. And there were definitely some times where we scrapped it together in a way that was not like foundationally solid, you know, like we pulled it off, but it was like, man, I don't want to do that again. That was really stressful. So we're sort of in this cool period where we're going back and like looking under our own hood, like, okay, what's super solid and scalable and what's like not scalable at all? What do we want to outsource and find a partner for? And what do we want to scale up in-house? And so that's kind of the cool process we're in now. We haven't taken any investment to this point. I think if we found a great partner, that's of interest. You know, I think finding someone who has a passion for what we're doing and shares our ethics, it would be really cool to see what we could do. You know, my husband and I just can't really fund it any further, and it continues to fund itself to a degree. But if we wanted to change the curve from, you know, from this to this, we would need to, you know, we'll need to figure out who we want to partner with to make that happen. So I think there's some cool stuff out there. I think it's a really tricky market, because, you know, sometimes the loudest voices are those that get heard. Sometimes the most gimmicky voices are the ones that get heard. And so that can be a little bit discouraging, but I keep telling myself, like, jeans and a white t-shirt, never the wrong choice, never. And so I know that we'll find the right avenue for growth, Osmia style. It just may not look like, you know, the Beauty Independent article of the week.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody should keep an eye on your brand. You're definitely never going to go out of style for me, for sure. And thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you would like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the Blue Beauty series and to meet some of the speakers online, join Beauty Influence Network. Thanks again, and I will see you next time.